By now, just about anybody who uses a computer has noticed what happens when you buy something online or even just look at something you're thinking of buying. For a while after that, all the ads that show up in just about any web page you look at are about the product you bought or thought of buying. So our preferences are certainly taking note of. How far does our information travel, and how far should it travel? And how much of a say do we get in the matter? Today's guest takes up those questions and the often troubling answers in his book, Techno Creep. Thomas B. Keenan is the author. He's a computer security expert. He helped the Canadian government write its computer crime laws 3 decades ago. He teaches environmental design and computer science at the University of Calgary. Tom Keenan, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Very good to have you. This is your first book?
Yes, it is. I've written academic books that, 19 people order, but this is one that's for everybody.
It's a very timely topic, and I guess the question for some people would be, what took you so long?
I've been accumulating this stuff for a long time, but finally, I was chased by a wall of it. I mean, I looked at it on the Sears site, and everywhere I went on the internet, there was this wall of it, and Sears kept trying to sell it to me. So I decided to lift the covers a little bit and see, how this jumps from place to place. And what I found is there are all these wheels within wheels in technology that almost nobody knows about.
Which begs the question, how much do the people who are operating it know about? Is it one of these things where people set up and just kind of forget about it and don't go back and revisit it very often?
No, it's very deliberate. So, for example, there's something called FBX. It stands for Facebook Exchange. If you look, let's say, on eBay at a Rolex watch, and then you decide not to buy it, you are sold in an online, real-time auction for fractions of a cent because you express interest. And all of a sudden, that same watch or those same headphones will appear in a sponsored ad on your Facebook page. That's because they know you're interested, and you're worth more because you're interested. So this is a business. It's a multi-billion-dollar business in which we are the product.
All right, so that explains why when you get an interest in something and just, make some mild inquiries, all of a sudden it starts showing up as sponsored stuff in Facebook as well.
Sure, or if you complete a survey, one of these, online surveys, and suddenly they know lots about you. So I encourage people to, make up medical conditions, decide that you're pregnant or that you have hemorrhoids or something when you fill out these surveys, and you're going to find that all of a sudden they're trying to sell you Preparation H or something.
Right. That's a fun stuff. You could at least have a good time with it. I'm curious about the dedication in the book, Tom. Your parents let you keep what in the basement as a kid?
White rats. I went to the Bronx High School of Science. Now, I have to tell you, I'm the runt of my class there because two of my year classmates have Nobel Prizes in physics. I decided I liked biology. Back then, and it's remarkable, they let us do surgery. I mean, my friends would say, would you come in early tomorrow? We'll scrub in together and do a splenectomy. So we actually had a little operating room at the school. It was a very special school in the Bronx, part of the public school system, but you had to take a test to get in. And the rats had to go somewhere over Christmas. So I volunteered to keep the rats in my basement, my parents' basement in the Bronx. Of course, one of the rats got loose, and I don't think my mother ever forgave me for that one.
All right, that explains the white rats part of this thing. The basic concept of the book, I mean, is Techno Creep meant to have sort of a double entendre in both Mission Creep and Give Me the Creeps?
Absolutely. I mean, and there are creepy people out there. So there's one sitting over in North Korea right now attracting a lot of people's attention. One that I write about in the book is the creepy guy who spied on Miss Teen USA. How did he do it? He bought some malware called Black Shades that allowed him to infect her computer. She probably clicked on some link, and all of a sudden, he can turn on the camera. Now, where does Miss Teen USA, Cassidy Wolf, keep her computer? In her bedroom, like most teenage girls. All of a sudden, this guy has photos of her, and he starts blackmailing her. She told her mother. Mother went to the FBI, and the guy's in jail now, which is good.
Well, which raises the question, and I know you bring this up in the book, and let me give you a personal example. We have a couple of computers on a network at home, and when we turn the newer computer on, the older computer seems to spring to life, which I always attributed to just being it's on the network and knows it needs to be alert thing, but the fact is that it seems to turn on and turn off by itself a lot over the course of a day, and not always with the other computer being on. I mean, when our computers are turning on, is it a flaw with the computer, or is somebody actually accessing them?
We don't know. That's the creepy part. There's so much going on that we actually don't know. Again, I look at an ad online for a chandelier. It was a photo of a chandelier in an estate sale. And all of a sudden, Google serves me an ad for chandeliers.com. And now I thought, hey, I'm pretty technical. I'll figure out how they did this. So I look at the name of the file, and it's chandelier.jpg. So I said to myself, yeah, that's how they got it. They know that's a chandelier. Then I read an article that Google has amazing image recognition and facial recognition capability. Maybe they know that's a chandelier. Maybe they know whose face is in that picture. The creepy part is we don't know what they know.
I didn't realize, too, until reading in Techno Creep, that in terms of recognizing images, that people who own copyrights can actually use their images as the device by which to search to see if anybody else is using it against the copyright.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a company in Toronto called TinEye that pioneered that technology, and Google has it now. So what you can do, I mean, I do a lot of writing where I need public domain images. So I'll take a picture of, again, the great leader from Korea, and I will find a photo of him that I like and trace it back to its original source, like the Korea News Agency, and make sure that it's a usable photo. All you have to do in Google Image Search is throw a photo in there. You would be amazed at what you find. There's a photo of Barack Obama smoking a cigarette. And I took that photo, and I ran it to see where it was used. And the most amazing places used it. One was stormfront.org, which is a neo-Nazi website. And they just used it, you know, during his campaign to discredit him because they had a photo of Obama smoking, which he used to do.
Wow. It's amazing the kinds of things you can find out there and where people get their stuff from. We're talking to Thomas Keenan about his book, Techno Creep, The Surrender of Privacy and the Capitalization of Intimacy. We'll take a short break and return more to talk with Thomas about this. And you can join us as well. 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Back with Tom Keenan, Techno Creep, and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the Canadian computer security expert Thomas Keenan. His book is called Techno Creep, The Surrender of Privacy and the Capitalization of Intimacy. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the ways in which technology creeps further into our lives and becomes further creepy in the process. Phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Tom, you're right. We need to raise the bar in our thinking about techno-creepiness. Do we not think enough about this or think seriously enough about it? Is that the issue?
No, we don't. There are whole areas that people don't even know about. So, you know, let's put aside the Internet. Let's say you never go online. You're a total Luddite. But you want to take your granddaughter to Disney World. You go down there now, and you're going to be offered a band called a My Magic wristband. This is why I say Disney properties are so creepy, maybe the creepiest place in America, because this band tracks you. As you and little Sally go through the park, they know every ride you go on, they know every place you stop, they know how many times you go to the bathroom, if they want to check that, and they also send the message. So let's say Sally's favorite character is Snow White. Snow White can get a message that says, Sally is approaching, her remaining spending limit for today is $39, and Snow White can pull out the doll. All this is possible. And the key point is that you can decline this. You can say, hey, I don't want those wristbands. Give me a paper ticket. And Disney will sell you one, but it just gets you into the park. You lose all your special privileges, jumping the line five times a day and all that. So imagine explaining to little Sally, well, we're standing in line for an hour, but that family went right on because they don't value their privacy.
Right, or try explaining to your kid, it's because I don't want people watching us. You're starting to sound paranoid to your little guys. Well, let's insert at this point, too, when we start talking about creepiness. You briefly mentioned North Korea a couple times, but, I mean, does the canceling of the premiere of The Interview confirm a lot of fears about the Internet and computer technology and how it can be used and used against us?
Well, here's a bit of news you can use. If you have an email archive that's sitting up on a disk somewhere and there's stuff in it, maybe that human resources memo from 2004 that you don't want people to see, it would be a really good idea over the Christmas break to take all that and put it on a USB stick. You know, there's so much out there. There's a presumption that we save everything. I'm sure when you bought one of those new computers, you just copied everything from the old computer because you were too lazy to decide what to keep.
Right.
That buildup can be incriminating. Even stuff that we don't think is incriminating now. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the television show Person of Interest. It's all about surveillance
cameras.
Sure,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have examples in the book, for example, a guy who was totally innocent, and he parked in parking stall number 11. The guy in parking stall number 12 was a mafia bigwig, and this my friend didn't know anything about it, but he found himself in the police computer as a known associate just because he said good morning every day to this guy. So our behavior can be tracked, and in the future, I say beware of time-traveling robots from the future. Someone can come back and look at what you did now and say, wait a minute, why did you buy that thing on eBay? Why did you take that book out of the library? There's a huge potential for abuse there.
Yeah, I saw that part about we don't have robots in the future, but we do have cases where people can make associations based on time and place and make assumptions about those.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, Amazon is great, and my book's available on Amazon and on Audible. And when you go there, you see other books. And I actually like that because it goes, people who bought Techno Creep also bought, and I wound up buying some of the books that suggested. But for a while, it was a little creepy because if you put in Call of Duty, the video game, it said people who bought that also bought World of Warcraft and adult-sized disposable diapers.
What?
That's because gamers don't want to leave the game console. So there was a correlation innocently detected by Amazon. I have the screenshot that shows that people who buy video games also buy, in combination, buy disposable diapers in 34 to 36 inch width.
Oh, wow. So you could decide you want, there are a couple of books you might want, and while you're at it, you might buy some other supplies, and it might not stop at diapers, certainly. Tom, you still there? Uh-oh, I thought I heard Tom Keenan's voice start to drain away. Looks like we got a bad cell phone connection. We're going to reestablish that. Our guest is Thomas B. Keenan. He is a Canadian computer security expert, helped design the Canadian government's computer crime laws 3 decades ago. He teaches environmental design and computer science at the University of Calgary. His book is called Techno Creep, The Surrender of Privacy and the Capitalization of Intimacy. And maybe that was a voiceover internet protocol thing. My God, did we talk about the wrong people at the wrong time? Is that what happened here? Anyway, trying to get Thomas Keenan back on the line. Your phone calls and emails welcome here on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Tom Keenan, as you heard, went to a very advanced high school in the Bronx in the United States. He's from New York City. And I was able to engage in some really interesting scientific work there, including surgery on animals, which probably wouldn't be done today, I think he acknowledges. But also the white rats from the school came home with them at Christmas time, he's talked about. What are the things that creep you out when you think about techno creep and the ways in which technology moves further into our lives? Join us on the exchange with your thoughts, your comments, your questions for Tom. 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address again, jx@jeffnet.org. We back with you, Tom?
Yeah, we're back, and I don't know if we said something there that triggered the surveillance apparatus or something, but the phone just went blank.
All right, I made the same joke on my end as well about maybe it was a voiceover internet protocol phone or something, but that was strange. All right, so into some of the technology here. Fun stuff here that you write about ELIZA at MIT. What did that do?
You know, ELIZA was a project that was created to show how humans and computers were different in the way they think. So it mocked a Rogerian psychotherapist, and you would go in and you would say, hello, and it would say, hello, how are you? And you would say, I feel rotten, and it would say, why? Tell me about your family. And it was intended by its creator to actually, Joseph Weizenbaum, to actually show that computers had limitations. Amazingly, he found his secretary enjoyed talking with it, that she actually was having conversations as if it was a real psychotherapist. And she felt, when she found out that he could read the logs, she felt violated. She felt her privacy had been invaded because the boss was reading her private conversations with this computer.
Well, it seems like one of the main issues is that as time goes on, we have a harder time telling our communications with computers apart from communications with people.
Yeah, we have a thing called the Turing test in which computers attempt to impersonate people, you know, and that gets better every year. So more and more human judges aren't fooled by that simply because artificial intelligence is very good. And you know, I got to speak to Raymond Kurzweil recently. He is predicting the singularity where computers become smarter than us, and you know, maybe they keep us around as pets or something like that.
Which brings up a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Keenan. His book is Techno Creep.
Tom, I hate you. You just stole my thunder.
Oh, my God. Well, thunder on.
Well, I'm absolutely convinced we're in the midst of the singularity at this particular point. I remember during the Y2K situation, the dire consequences of the infrastructure around us failing. And frankly, it seems to me that we're already a cybernetic organism as a society and a culture, because most of the systems that we use are either computer operated, computer moderated, or computer controlled. And we're kind of the intelligent appendix to all of this. And I'll leave my comment there.
All right, thanks for that,
Paul.
Well,
you're totally right about that. And for example, the latest surveillance systems are a human-computer combination. So in San Francisco, they're putting in these special cameras that look in all directions. They can detect things like, did you leave a package there? But then it interfaces with the human who decides, you know, are you a little old lady who maybe dropped her purse, or are you a possible terrorist or whatever? So you're absolutely right. This human-computer cyborg type thing is really coming. I've got a friend who's got a bionic eye, and he's a U.S. citizen but living in Canada. He went in to the U.S. embassy, and they said, well, why are you wearing that thing? Take it off. He said, I'm a cyborg. And they said, oh, okay. That bench over there is the waiting area for cyborgs. You can sit on that till you'll take that thing off.
All right. So let's talk about the ways in which the rest of us who don't have artificial eyes are dealing with things. Camera creep is a big part of this. How prevalent are cameras now? I mean, in TV crime dramas, it seems like they all talk about, well, let's check out the surveillance footage for that area. And there's always something.
Yeah, certainly in the UK, they're everywhere. I mean, there's, you know, so much CCTV coverage. I'm just finding, you know, everybody has, the police are now starting to wear body cameras, and that's been a contentious issue. But I quote in the book the San Diego police chief saying, we have to wear them because the other guys are videotaping us. We have to videotape them back. But there's also a number of pieces of malware that can take over your cell phone and turn on the camera. There's one called Boyfriend Tracker that's big in Brazil, and girls put it on their boyfriend, and then they see everything he does that might involve other girls.
Really? I mean, how is this? Is somebody making a pretty penny selling this stuff?
Yeah, there actually is. I attended a conference in Washington, and there was a whole list of these companies that make, you know, $29.99 a month, selling men wife tracker type things. And basically, they are things, malware that you put on somebody's cell phone so you can track their every movement, you can see their every tweet. Obviously, if you need to do that, the relationship is in serious trouble and technology is not going to help.
Probably not. But are there legal limits to these uses? I mean, there must be. Are there some laws that would apply here?
You know, there are a number of privacy laws, but then it comes down to, well, what can parents do with their kids, right? Now, one woman in Texas created an app, so if her daughter doesn't answer the phone when mom calls, nobody can call the daughter. And this is just like some housewife who figured out how to make this app. And her argument was, I pay for the phone, so I should take control of it. There are certain limitations, obviously, legal limitations on where you can spy on people. The reality is that they don't care. There are all these cameras out there that are unsecured. There are whole websites where you can look into dentist offices and things like that because people have been too lazy to set up a password when they put up a camera. So, you know, one of the messages is don't be lazy.
Hmm. There are certain limits, obviously, to the utility of cameras, though, especially when we talk about things like body cameras for the police, because so many people said of the Mike Brown case in Ferguson, if only there were cameras that had recorded that whole situation where Michael Brown was shot by the police officer. And yet in New York City, in the Eric Garner case, there was a camera on it, and ultimately people felt like they got the same result, where the police killed a black man and there was no penalty for it.
You know, there are enhancements to cameras. Homeland Security is working on the technology with sort of 3D cameras where they can look around corners, they can reconstruct faces if they only see part of it. So it's a very active area of research. I mean, facial recognition is getting very good. Google published a paper recently suggesting that their computer, I think it's 98.2% accurate, and humans are 98.7% in recognizing faces. So we're just about at that singularity threshold that your caller mentioned, where if we look at somebody online, we can figure out who they are.
Well, how sophisticated, so these programs, as you mentioned, then are sophisticated. They can identify people, and I'm curious, too, about situations. They can sort of read, almost like read the body language of people in situations?
Oh, absolutely. There's a posting, I make a reference to it in the book, about the first arrest that was captured by somebody wearing Google Glass. And it's in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and it's, you know, a scuffle and the cops take somebody away. What struck me as so interesting is it's about a two-minute-long clip that's up on YouTube with all kinds of other people's faces in it, children, people who probably don't want anyone to know they were in that casino that day. So there's this ethic now that's coming along that if you're in public, and it is true, it's a public place, we can take your picture. It used to not be such an issue. It's becoming an issue now.
Well, you write about also TVs and computers capable of keeping track of us. So go on, scare us a little more.
Yeah, there's a guy in the UK who found that his computer, his smart TV, was reporting back to its maker in either Japan or Korea, I forget which, and it even sent his private home video. So he was attempting to catalog what he watched. And one of the things I did for the book is I went to patents that have been filed, and some of the smart TVs have the capability to decide how many people are sitting in front of it so that they can decide whether to bill you for one viewer, two viewers, three viewers, four. The other thing is they can get an idea of what your behavior is from your body language, as you suggested. So maybe they serve you up an ad, you know, for condoms if you're getting kind of close, or for a marriage counsel if you're sitting at the opposite ends of the couch.
Or snacks if you keep getting up a lot, I guess, or something like that.
That too, or maybe, depends, you know, diapers if you get up too much.
Back to the diapers with Tom Keenan. He's the author of Techno Creep. Here's a call from Jacob in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I want to point out that I think bad people do bad things in part because they're anonymous and because they think they won't get caught. They think, you know, that your bad misdeed won't come back to haunt you. And I actually think the cure for that is more openness. And I imagine a society sometime in the future where every baby that's born is given a universal ID. It's actually similar to Social Security, but it's also linked to your passport, your citizenship, and a universal phone number that's going to follow you for the rest of your life. So if anyone wants to contact you or text you or email you, and maybe an email account, and the government maintains it, and you can actually store photos, for instance, or data. But I would say that it makes everything easier, like signing a contract. People actually know who you are, you know, just by giving that number, and then they could follow, you know, if you have a criminal record, or if you want to vote, you literally just might have a biometric link. It'll be really easy. Paperwork would definitely go down. Your health data would be universal. You know, if a doctor just meets you in a strange city and you're in the emergency room, they could get your health records and all your images, you know, within seconds through a national database.
So essentially you'd be assigned a phone number at birth? Is that what you're thinking of, Jacob?
Yeah, well, we're going to have phones, you know, in the future. And I imagine if you, instead of, you know, the average person moves every 5 years and then they change their address. But imagine if you had a phone number that anyone could dial at any time from the time, you know, that you're able to talk to the time that you die. Or, you know, like you're in a nursing home. You have a universal phone number that's always linked to your ID. But I'm saying it would reduce paperwork. It would simplify everything from contracts to voting to finances, the purchase, you know, and I think we tend to have a lot of paranoid people in society, and I tend to be less paranoid. And I think people with something to hide, if you have a criminal record, they want, you know, more protection. They want, you know, everything to not be linked, and they want, you know, pandemonium in the information technology. But I think information technology is a tool that could be used for good or evil. It could simplify our lives and reduce paperwork, and I think that's what we have to push towards.
All right, an interesting concept. Jacob, thanks for that, Jacob.
You know, Jacob, you're onto something there. You're a little bit prophetic. One of the things I discovered in TechnoCreep is we have that already. It's our DNA, and probably when you were born, if you were born in a hospital in the U.S., they took a little bit of blood from your heel and they put it on a piece of cardboard and filed it away. That is, as we all know from crime shows on TV, is probably enough information in there to get your DNA and make that the key. And I predict in the book, for example, in a few years, you'll walk into like a Walmart, and if there's still keypads there, as you touch the keypad, it will be whisked away, and your DNA will be analyzed. So that might be how you pay for the thing. But also, the next time you come into the store, they will have done a health analysis of you and said, hey, did you know you're pre-diabetic? We have a special coupon for you here. So, yes, it exists. Yes, it could happen. No, a lot of people don't want it. For whatever reason, people view a totalitarian state as somebody that could misuse that. If you really want to have this, move to Estonia. They have a single number over there now that's good for everything. You're paying your taxes, getting on the bus. So they have accepted it. It's kind of a cultural thing.
All right, we'll pick up the conversation there because it's a really interesting place to take a pause. Think for a moment about the information that you would want to have about yourself and then who you would want to have that information and not. And we'll pick up the conversation there with Tom Keenan. His book is Techno Creep, The Surrender of Privacy and the Capitalization of Intimacy. Back with Tom and your phone calls and emails on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the Canadian computer security expert Thomas Keenan. His book is called Techno Creep, The Surrender of Privacy and the Capitalization of Intimacy. We're talking about all the technologies that exist now and may exist by the time we're done talking here today, to track things about us, to find information out about us, things that happen with information that we volunteer through venues like Facebook, and things that we really would prefer nobody else to know. Join us on the Exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, same number, 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. All the chapters are something creep, intelligence creep, camera creep, image creep, and so on, down to bio creep. And this kind of gets into what we were just talking about, information that you'd want to know about yourself but wouldn't necessarily want other people to know. But I want to start with the death calculators that you point out exist in this chapter.
They're kind of novelties, actually, but if you put in certain factors about yourself, you can go and you can calculate your predicted date of death. It will even generate a tombstone. And I have a lot of respect for Edward Stone, by the way, and I know his parents. And I did use the example. I put his data in, and it gave me a predicted date of death, like in the 2040s or so. But the tombstone that came up was a little humorous. It said, Russian roulette isn't as much fun as I thought it was.
Oh, boy. All right. So some of these sites are tongue-in-cheek, it sounds like, by all means.
Yeah, they are definitely tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, you can actually, through medical testing, you can predict all kinds of things. And it becomes a real controversial issue whether people should even know about those tests. And certainly if your insurance company should know about it. I mean, let's say you go and have a test and it reveals that something bad is going to happen to you in your 30s or your 40s. Keep that information private. So I tell people, if you send in for tests and pay for them yourself, maybe your dog should have the test or your cat. We all in our family had our DNA done, but, you know, it's filed under the dog's name.
Interesting. And then that does raise a major issue where you get people making different sets of decisions. I mean, if you show up a certain gene, for example, happening today, people who show up with the breast cancer gene, they've got a history of breast cancer in their families, they may decide on preemptive mastectomy. Which is a decision for the patient to make, but then you get into the realm of, okay, what's a good medical decision versus what's a good insurance decision? And all kinds of people making decisions with your stuff.
And the other place that shows up is in cars. I mean, a lot of people have put the progressive snapshot into their car to try to get a discount on their insurance. And actually, it doesn't really track you. I mean, I looked into it. It only really cares about how much do you drive, how often do you hit the brakes hard, and do you drive in the middle of the night, which is a dangerous time to drive? But they could make it actually more assertive. In fact, I believe in Oregon there's actually an issue around so many people getting energy-efficient cars and electric cars that I saw some discussion, and you may know more about this than I do, about changing the way road tax is done. Because an electric car, you know, if the tax is collected as part of the gasoline, electric car pays no tax. I heard there was talk in your state of actually tracking people's driving, making a mandatory tracking. I'm not sure if that happened or not.
It hasn't happened yet. They're still in the testing phase, but you're dead right. And so the point is that if you can replace the gas tax with a mileage tax, then you still have vehicles paying for maintenance of the roads upon which they drive. The less gas they use, the less tax that comes in. And then the entire federal highway fund is just about bankrupt for the same reason. In Oregon, they're approaching it with very soft hands, though, and trying to give people options like, would you like to be tracked this way or this way? And obviously, you know, as far as being tracked by GPS, that's a big no-no for a lot of people.
Absolutely. We even had a situation in Vancouver where BC Transit Link, with the best of intentions, was tracking people's cell phones anonymously just to decide which roads were busy. And they got a huge privacy pushback on that. People said, yeah, you don't know who I am because my cell phone's anonymous, but the phone company knows, the government knows, so it's not quite that anonymous if you track cell phone things.
Let's take another call. We have Gene in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Tom Keenan, the author of Techno Creep. Gene, you there? Gene is not there. All right, moving on then. We talked about you were talking about the progressive insurance thing in the car, and it can't track us. But the fact is there are all kinds of sensors, and this is a chapter on sensor creep. Okay, I'd heard about the clothing stuff before, that there can be tags that ride around with clothing, but I had not heard about the smart toilet before.
Absolutely. Toto, which is a big Asian company, makes a toilet that will do an instant urinalysis of you every time you use it. So it identifies who you are by your precise body weight. Hopefully you don't have two people in the household who weigh about the same. It then does the urinalysis, and it can send it to your doctor's office. Again, the fear is, who else does it share it with? In fact, I have, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I found a great article called Your Nike Fuel Band Knows When You're Having Sex. And that's one of those fitness monitors. It's the middle of the night. You know, if you're a male, you just burned 150 calories. You took zero steps. Your fuel band could come to a conclusion about what you've been doing. It could tweet it. I know a guy who puts up automatically on his Facebook every day how many steps he took. Well, you know, it's just one step from that for your fuel band to rat you out, and hopefully you're in bed with the right person.
Oh, yikes. All right. In the chapter on image creep, you write about your first exposure to something like Google Glass, and it predates Google Glass by quite a few years, it sounds like.
Yeah, they sent me, I was reviewing technology projects, and they sent me this contraption that involved a prism, and you could watch television, but you could also, you know, see the real world around you, a bit like Google Glass. And I was sitting in my office at the university, and the cleaning lady came in, and I was watching Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes, and I suddenly saw this incredible creature that had Mike Wallace's head from the waist up and the cleaning lady's body, and I screamed. And she saw me wearing this contraption, and she screamed. And so we just kind of had this encounter there. But, you know, there is this real issue. They're starting to call people with Google Glass glass holes. And certainly in Silicon Valley, there's a whole etiquette. There's a growing list of places you're not allowed to wear them. I mean, obviously in the gym locker room, but also in the casinos, in banks, and so on. So it's starting to be that it's something that kind of you have to be very careful about. You can't wear them driving, for example. I know, you know, in California, people get tickets for driving with them.
Interesting. Let's take another call. Here's Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about techno creep with Thomas Keenan.
Yes, thank you for this program. A friend of mine has a rather new VW diesel car, and it's got a lot of electronic bells and whistles in it, and one of them is Sirius satellite reception. And the question is, can that system in that car communicate somehow, unbeknownst or unawares of the owner, that how much the owner is actually using that system?
Yeah, I mean, we already have seen evidence that set-top boxes can communicate back. Because remember when there was a costume malfunction, I think it was Janet Jackson who lost part of her costume, it was announced that that was the most replayed video clip on television through TiVo. And then TiVo suddenly realized they just unveiled that they're watching what people are watching. So I have no doubt that Sirius has some capabilities there. It's even worse than that, though. Cars are very hackable. Every year I go to a conference in Las Vegas called DEF CON, and this year there was a guy who just hacked a car from outside. He unlocked it using a cell phone. He was able to raise and lower the windows, blow the horn, and even apply the brake. And this was all without having any physical access to the car. The reason is exactly what you said, what they call the entertainment network in the car that connects the radio and the Bluetooth phone and all that, is often the weak spot, and then the bad guys jump from the entertainment network to the car control network, and all of a sudden they're slamming on the brakes.
Wow, it seems like they would have been thinking up some firewalls between those two systems so that that kind of stuff can't happen. I can just imagine criminals putting the brakes on in police cars.
Yeah, and the issue, of course, is that we don't think, we want all this technology. I mean, also at DEF CON, this guy called the press conference, he said, look, I'm a diabetic and I have an implantable insulin pump and it can be hacked remotely. So I thought, man, this guy's stupid, right? But he kept back a few key details. The point he was trying to make is that we do a lot of things for convenience. So they made this implantable pump accessible from outside his body for a good reason. They didn't want to have to cut him open to go and, you know, and make adjustments to it, but the reality is they didn't think about the security of it. So every time somebody adds something, every time you invite something into your house, like a Nest thermostat, sounds totally innocuous, but I've seen Nest thermostats be hacked so people can take control of your heating system. You always want to think about the benefits and are they worth the risk?
Yeah, interesting. So that if you don't think about, okay, well, somebody might get into my computer and see my pictures and stuff, but if you have stuff that is like a smart thermostat or even if it's attached to your water heater or something, suddenly your hot water is 20 degrees hotter tomorrow because your neighbor's mad at you.
Yeah, absolutely. Your neighbor can take control of that stuff. There's a guy who demonstrated how he hacked the whole hotel in China. And this guy is pretty brave because you don't mess with hotels in China. And I said, so what did you actually do to prove that you were into the system? He said, I actually just turned on the do not disturb lights on all the rooms in my corridor as a proof of concept. He said, I wasn't going to do anything like, you know, turn on all the televisions because I'd still be in China if I did that.
Huh. That's good to know, though, that those things are getting to be possible. Let's take another call from John in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Keenan, the author of Techno Creep.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
So I was just going to comment on two things. One is that I have a 2008 Chevy, and OnStar will regularly tell me when I need to change the oil or if I have a brake light out or any number of other things. So they absolutely do know what you're doing and what your vehicle is doing. And the other one is a comment on the fact that it's not only technology. I have been calling this radio program for probably 10 years, and if somebody had a little notebook and were paying attention, they would have a pretty good profile on me by now.
Just for the things you've said here, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Just from the number of times I've called in and commented on different things, and you inadvertently give information out about, you know, like what I drive just now.
Right, right. And we've had people say, well, this is where I work, you know, and it's, oh, now I know more about them than I did before.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's not just technology creep. It's, you know, anything in the world anymore seems to have a little gathering bit going on.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. And those seem to expand all the time, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I think that John's absolutely right. Somebody with a notebook, I mean, I've seen that over in Poland. You know, you think that the secret police are gone. It was the middle of the night, and I was standing at a red light. Nobody was crossing the street, and I thought, there's no cars. Why don't you cross? I mean, I'm a New Yorker originally, right? You jaywalk. And then I looked up, and there was a guy with a notebook in the corner, and this was just a few years ago. So there are still people taking notes on you. The difference with technology is it gets so easy to collect. You look at something online, and it's zero cost for somebody to save that, and that information never goes away. So all of your purchases on Amazon, I mean, I love Amazon because they sell my book. There is no question that you are being tracked, and it will suggest other books to you based upon your habits. And that information is being shared between companies. That's what we don't think about, but you're actually worth money. So particularly if you have something like a medical condition, you're going to find that that information is being sold for quite a lot of money because they want to target you for the possible drug or something like that.
Now, in some cases, do you just not get services if you refuse to provide the information and say, oh, sorry, then go someplace else?
It's a good point to bring up. I have a whole chapter called Anti-Creep, in which I suggest that maybe you want to be a little fast and loose with your information. Obviously, you shouldn't use your mother's real maiden name. Make up another one that's kind of a secret password, because somebody is going to go on Ancestry.com and figure that one out. That's a dopey password. But I don't even get out my real birth date. You know, I get birthday greetings every month from different sites because I just make up birth dates. You don't have to give your real postal code even, unless you expect to get mail from them. If they ask for your postal code, what, 90210 is a good one. Or in Canada, we have letters and numbers, so I use ho, 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 which belongs to Santa Claus. And if they ever send mail, it's going to go to the North Pole.
It seems like one of the other ways you could anti-creep is to be a little more careful about agreeing to terms of service. And I know there have been a couple of times. Well, for example, I got a new phone a few weeks ago, and you know, there's the Facebook app versus just going to Facebook through the browser. And the Facebook app says, oh, we want access to your phone numbers and all the other stuff. And I said, no.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Sometimes you do that, and they go, well, no, back. In other words, we're not going to give you a service. But the best example of that is there are a lot of flashlight applications, and you look at what they want. We want access to your Facebook page. We want access to your Twitter. We want all your contacts. It's a flashlight, you know, so they ask for it, and as you said, most people go, I agree, and they've given permission for that, and that does hold up in court. There's a great film called Terms and Conditions May Apply. And one of the things that they suggest in that film is you're worth, if you use Google, like Gmail and YouTube and so on, you're worth $500 a year to them in terms of what they can make by selling you. And there's no option to say, here's $500, don't sell me. They just treat you as a product and they sell you.
So be careful with your information. If it doesn't have to be specific information about you, give the wrong stuff. Sounds like a great thing that works for you.
Yeah, you know, I get away with quite a bit of it. You can, you know, I was thinking, you say your phone number only works within your listening area. I could spook myself to be in your listening area if I want to call your number. That's all easy technology.
All right, much to learn in the book. It's called Techno Creep. Thomas P. Keenan wrote it. He's been our guest. Tom, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right, be good.